It's the most important day on the broadcast calendar for 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL. It's the 2014 WCHL Community Forum. 10 hours live from the WCHL studios in Chapel Hill, featuring more than 60 members of our community here to discuss and debate a variety of local issues. The WCHL Community Forum is presented by Orange County Government. Our forum is also brought to you by Jersey Mike's, VHRE, and the UPS stores, and Durham Technical Community College. Join us now on WCHL and streaming live on our website, chapelboro.com. Now, Hour 9 of the WCHL Community Forum, tomorrow's newsmakers. Here's your moderator, Sharon Hill.
Welcome to Hour 9 of the 2014 WCHL Community Forum. A number of new faces are now writing the laws that affect your everyday life. What are their agendas? And how can a supporting cast like local business owners help? Where do they want to see North Carolina go? How will their choices keep you on your life path or take you in another direction? We'll tackle these topics and more with Orange County Commissioner Mark Dorison.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Orange County Commissioner Renee Price.
Good afternoon.
North Carolina District 50 Representative Greg Meyer.
Hello.
Laura Morrison, Associate Vice President of Membership at Chapel Hill Carrboro Chamber of Commerce.
Hi, Sharon.
Damon Siles of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen.
Hi there.
And Maria Palmer of the Chapel Hill Town Council.
Hola.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? Gracias. Well, folks, let's start off by having each of you spend around 30 seconds and tell us, what are your hot buttons? What are your hot buttons? Let's start over here with Greg.
Well, I just drove back from Raleigh, and I was in an education policy hearing at the General Assembly, and my hot button is that most of the people in the General Assembly don't know a darn thing about education, and I cannot believe that they're making some of the decisions that they're making, and I'm not so optimistic about what's going to happen in our legislative session this year, and I don't quite know how to feel about that yet.
Ah, thank you very much, Greg. I think he's got opinions. Mark, how about you?
I'm really interested in, at the county level, in really focusing our attention on the impacts of poverty in our community, particularly child poverty. I think Orange County is a wealthy community, one of the wealthiest in the state, and as a result, much of the impacts of poverty and the impacts on low-wealth people in this community are invisible to many of us, but they are real, they are severe, and I think we've got the capacity and we say we have the commitment to do something about it, so I'd like to see us test that commitment.
Thank you very much, Mark. How about you, Maria?
Well, along the lines of what Mark said, I'm focused on making Chapel Hill a place where everybody can live. So if you are poor and you can't afford to pay the ever-rising rents in Chapel Hill, if you can't afford to pay the daycare costs, if you can't, even if you have a full-time job, some people have two jobs, you know, you feel like you don't have a home, you don't have a place here in our community, and that has to change.
Thank you, Maria. Mm-hmm. Renee, how about you?
Well, I share some of the same interests, but in addition to that, community services such as libraries that help us with our education, and of course educational services, making sure our teachers are paid and that we have enough resources in our schools. I'm also concerned about jobs and economic development. We talk a lot about economic development and affordability in our homes and all that. But if people have jobs that pay a decent salary, then we can tackle some of those problems. I'm also concerned about the urban-rural divide. You know, we've got, our urban areas are growing, and we also have to look at the rural areas that we cherish so much that have been a part of Orange County throughout its history. It's part of our heritage. But I would say, to sum it all up, you know, we are a progressive community, at least we say we are, and I would like us to actually walk that talk.
Walk the talk. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Renee. Damon.
I was at an event this morning hosted by the Chamber of Commerce and with local elected officials and various business owners and other chamber members. And I asked, not wanting to be on the receiving end of a one-way conversation, I asked the folks in attendance if they would please frame their discussion or their questions for me around four domains, and I talked about environmental protection and social equity and quality of life, and there was one more, economy. And I, in particular, challenged them to think about those domains in that order: environment, equity, quality of life, and economy. We're not often used to framing things around those issues and in that order. It felt like a little bit of a dud when I did it, but I did it anyway. And I think I did it because I think it's important for us to have conversations about the issues in that order if we're going to continue living on this planet. Of course, one problem is that each of us around this table is going to have that conversation in a different way. You know, the conversation that Greg has in the General Assembly with his new colleagues, and including the people, fellow committee members he mentioned, is going to be a very different kind of conversation than the one that we have in Carrboro, whose elected officials, majority of which were arrested in front of the General Assembly to protest exactly the kinds of crazy policies being implemented there. So we have that challenge too, but that was my challenge to the members this morning, and I hope that we can continue to have that conversation.
Thank you, Damon. How about you, Laura?
Thanks, Sharon. My hot button issue is domestic violence and how we can come together as a community and raise awareness about, Renee said something that resonates with me. She said, we're a progressive community, at least we think we are. And I think that's an issue that we often don't talk about because it's not fun and we don't like to talk about it. So I'm interested in how we can talk about domestic violence, but also how we can build up young women in creative ways so they know how to call attention to violence or how to get out of negative relationships. So something that I've been talking a lot with Zach Ward from DSI Comedy is relaunching our Empower program to work with young girls to teach them confidence through comedy. And I think all of those things kind of tie in together.
Confidence through comedy.
Got it.
Classic. Well, all of you have given us a lot to think about, but let's move on. I'll open it up to anyone who'd like to start with this question. What current issue do you believe is not getting enough attention? What current issue do you believe is not getting enough attention? Let's start with Maria.
Health.
Health?
Chapel Hill has a fabulous hospital and probably more doctors per capita than anywhere in the state, yet we have people who can't afford to go to a doctor. And we have terrible insurance coverage, for example, for our teachers. And so we have Blue Cross Blue Shield here around the corner, and why I had a person that moved here from Seattle who told me the best insurance he could buy in his new job in Chapel Hill was worse than the worst insurance choice he had in Seattle. He said the best here is still worse. And I can tell you the medical bills and I've been trying to get two people seen by doctors, and Piedmont Health doesn't have space. It's the only, you know, sure, you can go to the emergency room, but that costs the community a whole lot of money, and the attention is terrible because they're not gonna look at your whole health. But we're not even talking about it. Of course, because when people don't have enough housing, when we have a terrible achievement gap, when we have all these other issues that are important, but every family has a problem with affording and providing quality health care for their families.
Maria, how can we get started to fix that problem? Where do we begin?
We need to get folks at the table. We need to get the hospital to commit to helping the community to provide affordable health care, including mental health. We need to get El Futuro. It's a fabulous organization providing mental health, but the agency that administers Medicaid dollars is refusing to reimburse them because mental health apparently is not considered emergency care for some immigrant families. And so it's at a crisis point for many families, and we need to sit down with the people who make the important decisions, including the schools, because we need to provide health care in the schools. We need clinics in the schools, at least physician's assistants and qualified nurses that can actually, under the supervision of a doctor, write prescriptions. We can do so much, and we're not even discussing it. So I just wanted to put that on the table.
Thank you, Maria. Mm-hmm. Who else finds that there's something that's not being taken care of? Renee Price. Well,
I actually can think of several things. One is poverty. I think we talk about it, but we haven't really done much about it. And I'm talking about poverty, not just, you know, in terms of children, childhood poverty, but also our seniors. And we've got more people, especially with the baby boomers now aging out, and we're still here, you know. And a lot of people are living under the radar, and we don't know their needs. Now, they may get meals and whatnot from Meals on Wheels or from their local church, but we're really not addressing that issue well. And I see people living on the street, especially in the summertime. They are in the street, or the people are living in the woods. And it's something that we are not paying attention to. Something else is the school-to-prison pipeline. We know that there's an issue there, but I don't know how much we're really doing to make changes. Mm-hmm. And I'll just mention a third thing, which would be human trafficking. That is something I've I did a panel discussion about a year and a half ago, and it is a problem, but it's something we don't like to talk about, similar to what Laura Morrison was talking about. Yes. With domestic violence, the human trafficking. It's something, you know, people don't want to talk about it, but it's real, and it's in Orange County.
And you said we aren't handling it well. What are we doing, even if it's a small piece? What are we doing? Anything about these topics, especially the human trafficking?
We talk about it. There are discussions. We can get, you know, four people together to say it exists. But I personally, I don't know what is being done, because it's something that we don't like to talk about or even to admit. And a lot of people don't even know that it's happening because they don't know the signs. So
is the Chapel Hill and Orange County problem?
Yes. It's global.
It's global.
It is global.
Thank you.
We are doing some things. El Futuro does provide help. Many of the people trafficked are immigrants, and mm-hmm. El Futuro provides mental health. I was on the board of El Futuro until it conflicted with town council meetings, so I had to resign about a month ago. But it, you know, when we get a report that we have been able to register a middle schooler, an eighth grader in school that was rescued from human trafficking, it hits home. It, you know, when you know they're attending a school with your child in Durham, in Carver Chapel Hill, a kid that hasn't seen her parents in 2 years, who has been basically, you know, a slave, and is reentering society in the eighth grade. And we have a wonderful crisis unit in our police department, at least in Chapel Hill, but it needs more. We need more people. We're going to elect a new sheriff, and hopefully that'll be something that our new sheriff will tackle forcefully.
Thank you. Laura, they're talking about topics that you mentioned as far as human trafficking. What are your thoughts on that topic?
I can't speak too knowledgeably about it. I do know that the Carolina Women's Center at UNC does a lot of work. And I believe they either hold an annual event or they, through Facebook, publicize an annual conference where they do work on that. I think a lot of these things tie in together. Poverty, mental health, human trafficking, all of these things kind of contribute to a culture that is pervasive of violence against women. So I think just getting people in the same room, even if it's just a conversation, it's not solving it, but it's a good first start to identify how the things intersect and start at least brainstorming some solutions.
Thank you, Laura. Who else has an issue that you don't believe is getting enough attention?
Well, I think that the Mark homogenization Dorison. Of Orange County is something that's not getting attention per se, but I think it's clear that the overall, the county is getting wider. It's getting more middle or upper middle class, that lower wealth people and people of color are being driven out, not literally, but practically, particularly in the southern part of the county. And I think as a community that talks about diversity and prioritizing diversity, there's a disconnect with what's actually happening on the ground. I don't think we've taken that sort of zoomed out perspective.
What's driving people out?
Cost, mostly. I think the costs and the cost of living, whether it's housing, whether it's utilities, whether it's transportation, lack of economic opportunities, but
I know lots of folks who, coming out of the university, out of grad school, lived in Chapel Hill or Carrboro for the 4 or 8 years they were here, and then when they're ready to buy a house, they go to Durham, or they go sometimes to Northern Orange, or sometimes to, you know, West Chatham, because it's just not affordable for them to live here. And so those are real and practical impacts, and I think that it's one that goes generally unseen.
Thank you, Mark Dorison. Greg, you're a man with many, many thoughts. What to you is being ignored?
I want to bring back up mental health, which Maria already talked on a little bit, and just to point out that for the entire 16 years that I've lived here and worked as a social worker, the mental health system has been under reform the entire time. And I want to just illustrate it by pointing out that for a family who cares for someone, whether it be a child or a spouse or a parent, sibling, who has a mental health, chronic mental health problems or developmental disabilities, the system has never been stable under their feet. And it's often left to the family to have to figure out how to navigate the evolving system and provide for the care for the person that they love in the gaps that fall as a system continues to change and evolve and not have adequate care. And that it's something that our community doesn't notice, because it's very hard to know how to help another person's family when they're dealing with a mental health or developmental disability issue. And so it's not the type of thing where families even feel that they have others in their network who help them, you know, pick up the slack for that. It really is an area where the state has to be the prime delivery mechanism for services, and we haven't been doing that well for a long, long time.
Laura Morrison.
Props to Extraordinary Ventures, because they, the folks who founded Extraordinary Ventures, noticed the gap between when you have a child with developmental disabilities who graduates high school, they kind of fall in this gap of, well, now you're an adult and there aren't services provided for you. So they're providing a great service to our community, providing jobs for those folks. So I just want to give them a little shout out for contributing in the absence of state support.
Thank you. Damon, what about you with Carrboro? What do you think is being ignored or not given enough attention?
Well, the same issues we've heard about already are true of Carrboro, too. We all essentially live in the same community. I think this issue of affordability is one that we've been talking about for ever, it seems. This homogenization that Mark described has been going on for many, many years. The increase in the cost of living here has been going on for many, many years. And unfortunately, the same pressures that caused that to happen also reinforce and amplify the voices of those who have an interest in keeping it that way. It becomes difficult, both practically and politically, in the community for the people charged with making the decisions to feel like they can make progress on those issues, because the people with the loudest voices are often those who are clamoring for not change. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. And it requires, I suppose, a little bit of backbone from people in decision-making positions, but it also requires, I think, a little bit of consideration from those who talk about this problem of affordability and exclusion, but then don't create a space in which we can have an honest conversation about how we would approach a fix. Mm-hmm. So.
Back in the day, there was a term called institutionalized racism. Institutionalized racism. Renee, I see you nodding your head. Renee Price, is that what's happening with us now? Is it deliberate or what?
Well, if I say deliberate, that means I'm accusing someone, but I think it's pretty organic the way it's happening. You can't help, you know, when you have a university that is growing the way it is and so close to traditional, historic neighborhoods, it's hard not to see. There's going to be expansion. It's hard not for the university not to expand. But what's happening is it's going into those neighborhoods, Lincoln, Pine Knolls, and it's moving those families out. The cost of living is going up, so they have to go. They can't, you know, those families can't afford to live there anymore. So they are going to Durham and Alamance. So it is pushing people out, and it's all in the name of progress and, you know, modernization and, you know, urbanization. I see my colleague wants to chime in.
Mark
Dorison,
it's so interesting that you said institutional racism, because as I was coming here today, I was really thinking about that a lot. You know, in today, in yesterday's Chapel Hill News, they gave raspberries to the county commissioners, which is fine, for not making a decision on this recycling. But in that same raspberries, they attacked the decision to close the landfill, saying it would have been more cost effective, essentially, to keep that landfill open. And so to it would have been a that the county made a political decision and not a practical one in deciding to close the landfill. Well, that's the definition of institutional racism, right? That's saying, let's make a decision on what's cheapest. And if it's what's cheapest is to continue to disadvantage this historic African-American community, then that's okay. And it's okay because no one's saying we're deliberately or intentionally discriminating against anyone. But when we continue, and Damon's right, you know, it requires backbone on elected officials and even just to start talking about this and pulling back the cover on it and saying, this is what's happening in our community. And these are the disparate impacts that the decisions we're making are having on low wealth communities and communities of color, African Americans and Latinos. And then the community has to make a decision. Either we really believe what we say about social justice, and we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to pay more if that's what it costs to do justice to the Rogers Road community, for example. Or they have to say, we don't really care about social justice. That's not important. And you can think of policies, all of us could go around the table and think of policies that have this facially neutral quality, but that have these disparate impacts. And that's the definition of institutional racism,
yes,
and
exactly.
That's what we have to address.
Thank you. We've got 5 minutes. Greg Meyer, did you want to say something? Then go back to Renee.
So when we think about that from a leadership standpoint, we can't think about it in terms of personally mediated racism. That's not what we're talking about, and that's why Renee pointed out that, you know, is it deliberate? Well, it's not necessarily deliberate on anyone's part towards another specific person or group of people. But if you look at how do you end that, it takes support from above. It takes support from government. And part of being, you know, tomorrow's leaders, if that's what this hour is about, is I think we need a mind shift where we recognize that one of the most important things that government does is invest in long-term strategies that create opportunities for people that don't currently have them now. That's why we educate children, so they can have opportunities later, right? That's a simple example. But it also means that in an economically disadvantaged community, a community that doesn't have access to employment because there's a landfill next to it or they lack sewer usage or whatever it is, that making an investment in the infrastructure in that community is something you do that costs money up front but is going to pay dividends later, and that's how you overcome the legacy of the inequity that has existed there.
Well, I just want to follow up on one thing, and
Mark
then
Dorsey.
I'll stop talking for the rest of the time, so I don't want to hog the mic. But I just want to take issue, not with something Greg said, because I understand the difference between intentional discrimination and disparate impacts, right, unintentional discrimination. But I think that is a false dichotomy. I think if you as an elected body make a decision that you know is going to produce these disparate impacts. So you decide to adopt, just for an example, and this is a hypothetical, you're a school board, and you decide to adopt a student assignment plan that is gonna create concentrated, high poverty, or racially isolated schools. Now, that's not your intent. Your intent is everybody goes to the closest school to their house. But you know, you're able to predict that this is going to have a disparate impact. If you take that action anyway, then I believe you as the elected body, you are presumed to have taken that action. You are responsible for that action. To take that action anyway, knowing the natural and probable outcomes of your facially neutral policy, that's discrimination.
We have 3 minutes left. Renee, did you want to comment as well?
I was just going to follow up just to say that racism does exist. It's existed for a long time. I can talk to my father, who's 91 years old, and we will still say racism is alive and well in America. And it's just something that we have to admit. Now, for some people, it may be more benign, and for other people, it's more overt. But it's there, and it isn't always a matter of color. It could be ethnicity, you know, your language, and mostly income level. But it's there. And how we get around it is, you know, going back to what both Mark and Greg have said, we have to really put it out on the table and do something about it. Yes. Face the reality and do something about it. And one way to do that also is for people to start coming together. A lot of times people don't know how someone else lives or how they feel, but when you bring everybody to the table, sit around the table with a meal or something like that, and you break the ice, and you find out that, you know, the person next to you probably had the same background that you did.
Right.
Maybe some, you know, may had a few breaks here and there and was able to, you know, excel. But, you know, I think we need to get to know each other a little bit better and realize who we are.
It's all a matter of coming together.
Yeah.
Thank you, Renee. We have about 1 minute left. Final thoughts on this topic. All of you I consider to be champions. Let's get Damon's one minute and we'll come back.
Well, just following up on what Renee said and the others said very well.
Damon
Sias. I do think that, you know, there is no doubt that there are attitudes among individuals that are racist. That is incontrovertible. But I think often when we focus on that as the particular problem, what we lose is we start having a discussion about racism as a matter of people's moral failings, their individual moral failings. And that, to me, is not the important issue. The important issue is racism as something that is part and parcel. It is interwoven into the structure of the foundations of our society. It is something that always has been and probably always will be, frankly.
Yes.
And so that's what comes back to what Greg is talking about, where we have to find ways to compensate for that or mitigate that. We have to be very intentional about doing those things because we know that we can't escape what's in the foundation of this, of the culture in which we live.
And on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Hour 9 of the 2014 WCHL Community Forum with panelists Mark Dorison, Renee Price, Greg Meyer, Laura Morrison, Damon Siles, Maria Palmer. If you aren't already, follow us on Twitter and submit your questions using the hashtag WCHLForum. This is Sharon Hill. We'll be right back.
Vietri, the largest U.S. importer of fine, handcrafted Italian tableware and home decor, is proud to sponsor this year's WCHL Forum. As a vibrant member of Hillsborough and the surrounding community for over 30 years, Vietri inspires the celebration of life with family and friends through the joy of Italian designs. A family-owned company that encourages collaboration, the sharing of ideas, and the work of many hands, Vietri gives back to the community through fundraising, donations, and volunteerism. And it values the partnerships promoted by today's forum.
Every day at the UPS store, we're proud to support our community and we're proud to help small businesses. That's why we're your community resource for small business solutions. More than packing and shipping, we provide professional printing services, a real street address for business mailboxes, document shredding, secure scanning of documents for digital storage, and more. To learn more about how we can help you with all of your small business needs, stop by the UPS stores in Meadowmont, Chapel Hill North, and on Fordham Boulevard.
The UPS store, where we have fun taking exceptional care of our customers.
The Orange County Sheriff's Office reminds us that crime prevention is everyone's responsibility. If you observe suspicious activity taking place in your neighborhood, do not hesitate to dial 911. If you're interested in starting a community watch group in your neighborhood, please call Sergeant Butch Clark with the Crime Prevention Unit at the Orange County Sheriff's Office at 919-644-3050. That's 919-644-3050.
What are your plans for summer? How about getting a head start on college courses at Durham Tech? General online registration for summer term 2014 for all advised students, including those new to the college, newly admitted to a program, visiting students, or returning students, begins April 17th. Students who need to meet with an advisor should schedule an appointment as soon as possible. Summer term classes begin May 19th. For additional information, please visit www.durhamtech.edu/registration.
Today's offer at OurLocalDeal.com is from Trey Manwaring. It's half off, $200 worth of digitizing services available now for $100. 35mm slides have become casualties of the digital age, but with today's deal, bring your precious family memories to a modern medium. Trey's been in the industry for over 20 years, and he believes in preserving your family's history. He'll professionally scan your 35mm slides and save them in numerical order to digital format. It's half bought from Trey Manwaring. It's available for limited time, so buy it now at OurLocalDeal.com.
Spring is here, and you know what that means. Summer is right around the corner. You definitely want to look and feel your best, so Jersey Mike's Subs invites you to eat healthy with our 99% fat-free turkey. A delicious low-fat choice that's loaded with lean protein and great flavor, piled high with fresh onions, lettuce, and tomatoes, and served on our store-baked white or wheat bread. Eating one is a fantastic way to feel good about yourself. Order online at jerseymikesubs.com or call us at 919-918-SUBS.
You're listening to the 2014 WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and streaming live on our website, chapelboro.com. Once again, here is Sharon Hill.
Welcome back to Hour 9 of the 2014 WCHL Community Forum. I'm Sharon Hill, and we are here with tomorrow's newsmakers and today's panelists, Mark Dorison, Renee Price, Greg Meyer, Laura Morrison, Damon Siles, Maria Palmer. We've been joined by Aaron Keck. Aaron, do you have a question for our panel?
I do, yeah. First of all, thank you all for coming. It's been a great panel so far. I wanted to get back to a point that Laura made. Laura Morrison gave a shout out to Extraordinary Ventures, which I want to mention because it's a fairly new organization that has come into our area and made a huge difference in a very, very short period of time. And I mention that because I sort of want to throw that question open to all of you, because this is the Tomorrow's Newsmakers panel. In the last half hour, you've talked about a bunch of different issues that don't make it onto the town and county and state agendas. We've talked about poverty. We've talked about racism, institutional or otherwise. We've talked about domestic violence, mental health, human trafficking. All of you, and I'll include myself in here because I have a face for radio, but I'm young, and that makes a difference. That's an issue sometimes. We're all young people. We're all those of us who are... you're welcome. Flattery gets you everywhere. Those of us who are serving on elected boards are, for the most part, first-term legislators, or I think only first-term, maybe second-term, but I think just first-term legislators. When you are on those boards, or when you are going out in and being active in the community, how do you make a difference? What is it that you do as a young person in an entrenched community, or a first-term legislator on an entrenched board with very specific ideas about the way things should be? How do you, as an individual, be what Extraordinary Ventures has been to Chapel Hill and Orange County? How do you make a difference in an institution that is entrenched? Maria, you've got your hand up. I really want to hear what Greg Meyer has to say about this.
Greg Meyer.
Being in Raleigh, but Maria had her hand up first. So, yeah.
Go ahead, Greg.
So I'm going to Raleigh for the long term. I don't know how long I'll be there, right? But it's going to take us a while to get North Carolina back to where it needs to be. And I don't have any illusions that I'm going to be able to walk into the short session in May and get teachers paid at the level that they need to be paid or fix the mental health system. That's not going to happen. We don't have the power on my side of the aisle. I don't have the experience to be able to do it. So I walk in, first of all, as a student of the game, right? How am I going to play this game? What do I need to learn? Who do I need to align myself with? Who do I need to emulate? Who do I need to stay away from? And then over time, hopefully, I'll be able to position myself where I can pick a couple of issues to be a leader on and bring the new perspective that a younger, newer member brings and bring some new solutions. We'll see how long that takes. Hopefully not too many years, but I'm not going in looking for a quick fix.
Maria Palmer?
Well, I hope it doesn't take too many years, because the way North Carolina is going backwards, we need to elect more people like Greg. You know, we need to help other counties, and we need to take back the legislature. So
that would be helpful.
Yes, that would be, that would be, wouldn't it? But I was appointed to the State Board of Education by Governor Hunt, and boy, do I miss him, you know, and his vision and his leadership. So, but I think I have a real advantage. I'm an immigrant, so sometimes I can say things that other people are too embarrassed or have been told all their lives you can't say in polite company. And so I can say, wait a minute, Chapel Hill says this, but since I came here in 94, I've noticed this and this and this. And so reflect to the community what an outsider sees that's not so pretty. And basically speak that truth, my truth, you know. And sometimes people come quietly and thank me. And that happened to me on the state board, where I would question the results of our testing, for example, and say, how come our minorities perform this way in this test, and it may be biased? And the African-American, the two African-Americans on the board felt that they couldn't say that, because that would be, they would be perceived as looking at an excuse for the bad performance of black children. And I could say very honestly, well, I know what bias testing is, because I remember a math question that had to do with baseball, and I had never played baseball and didn't know what kind of, you know, I didn't know if it was a square or a rectangle or what, you know, or a triangle that you played baseball in, so I couldn't answer the math. So, you know, I understand bias, and I can say, and I can say those things. So I feel that Chapel Hill will benefit from that if people are willing to listen and not question my motives. I really want to strengthen our democracy and have us live up to our ideals, not come and change everything, but change is necessary. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even just to be what you think you are, you have to make some changes. Mm-hmm.
How about you, Mark Dorsey?
Well, I would say, I think being a new commissioner, what I've tried to do, I think all of us who are new elected officials have one opportunity, which is to really see how things have been done and to ask questions about why things have been done. There is a sense local government, like lots of governments, is a bureaucracy, and it's very much, a lot of what happens is the way it's always happened, and it continues to happen, and you know, without lots and lots of turnover, it's easy for the staff to really run the show. And not that they're not running it competently always, but so as a new board member, I think you have a chance to say, well, why do you do this something like this? Why is it like this? And maybe that's the right way to do it, but you have the opportunity to say, explain it to me, and explain it, and in doing so, explain it to the constituents. The other thing I think this is true for all of us around the table who are elected, I think all of us bring a particular set of experiences and expertise that has been missing in each of the respective boards we serve on. I like to think of, you know, I'm a civil rights lawyer, I have that background, and I feel like I, can help stake out the left pole on the board and shift the tone of the debate in that direction. I have a certain constituency that supported my candidacy that I don't think other elected officials had been able to tap into. I think the same is true for Damon, Renee, Maria. I mean, I think, you know, there were lots of people who supported my candidacy who I don't think really paid attention to the county commissioners very much. So I think that's true for all of us. So what we're doing is, I think ideally we're reaching different people, and we're also able to, I think, really bring some fresh perspectives. And that's what it takes. I mean, that's what we need if we're going to make the kind of changes that Maria's talking about, or any of us are talking about.
Thank you, Mark. Damon Siles has his hand up.
No, I agree with Mark's comments about bringing that kind of attitude to the position. I think one of the things, Aaron, that I found myself or observed myself doing, perhaps while not intending necessarily to do it, was to come to the role with a kind of posture of wanting to demonstrate how to disagree well. And I think that in itself has value in these contexts. And that it has value in really trivial, kind of mundane things, like this past week on the Board of Aldermen in Carrboro, we had a discussion about roof overhangs and building setbacks, you know, which I ended up being the dissenting vote on that particular issue. And, it was something that I enjoyed discussing. I'm kind of a geek for that sort of thing. And it's, you know, it's not a world-changing kind of issue to talk about, but I hope that what I did was engaged in a conversation that demonstrated being able to disagree well. But it also happens on a much bigger stage. You know, Reverend Barber, for example, who's been spearheading the Moral Monday movement, I think that he has taken this posture of wanting to disagree strongly, but well, and being respectful about what he's doing and respecting everyone who's involved in the movement and bringing more people into the movement and wanting the movement itself to show the way about how you behave in public and how you talk about public policy. So I think it's partly about what attitude you bring to the role.
Renee Price?
Well, yeah, coming to a new board is, coming new to a board has its challenges because, as Mark said, there are certain things that are already set in stone and, you know, do you challenge it or not? But one thing, there are two things that I remember. And number one, I've been struggling against whatever institution since the day I was born. I mean, being female, being African-American, you know, and then moving to the South, you know, being a Northerner, you know, in the South. So there's always been something, and I've always worked in some way in civil rights or human rights. So, you know, you have to speak up. But the other thing that I remember is that the people that elected me, well, they elected me because I said I was going to be their voice. So I go out into the community, they tell me what's on their mind, and I report it back. You know, I'm responsible to them as much as I am responsible for having a certain demeanor on the board. You know, as a commissioner, I have to work with six other people, but I also know that there's a whole lot of people that are out in the community that are watching me and that are depending on me, and that's the reason that I'm there. I'm there to serve. Mm-hmm. So if I have to say something that's going to ruffle somebody's feathers, well, I'm sorry. Well, no, I'm not sorry, really. Here it is, you know? You know, take it.
Well, it's a good point about, I mean, and Mark to Damon's Dorsen. Point as well is about, that was really eloquent about disagreeing well, because sometimes just asking the questions, like, why do you do something like this? Or why have we always done something like this? Is perceived as an attack, right? It's perceived as an attack on that it's not right or you've done something wrong. And folks can get very defensive
even
about that.
Perfectly innocent about it, like me.
Yeah, but it can create a defensive reaction that prevents the kind of conversation or dialogue that Damon was describing. So it's not as easy as just saying why. I mean, there is a dynamic that happens, and you know, your presence and how you, your demeanor and how you engage in those challenges affects the dynamic itself.
Mark Dorsen, how do you contain yourself when you see progress going at this glacial pace and you know there should be change? I can feel that you know there should be change. How do you handle this? How do you handle this stress?
Poorly, very poorly. I think you just continue to push as much as you can. It is very frustrating. I can just say for myself, I got involved in local government first in Carrboro and then on Orange, and then after a long time, and I got over the experience and as a county commissioner. And I think if you're a person who's committed to social change, like everyone around this table is, at some point you think, well, it would be great if there was some progressive thinkers on the policymaking body instead of just being out here on the outside fighting. And then you think, well, Orange County, it's so progressive, it'll be so easy. And then you get in there and you find that that it's a bureaucracy, that it moves very slowly, that it's administratively cumbersome, and that it is, and that change is hard. And so it is very frustrating, but you know, every day you start to push the rock up the hill and you hope that today it gets all the way to the top.
And throw the starfish into the ocean because you know eventually something is going to change.
That's right.
How do you handle it, Renee Price?
Well, it is very frustrating at times, and I go home and like, at midnight after a meeting, it's like, why? You know, why can't we move? And then I might shoot an email to Mark and say, you know, just a short email, like, what just happened? You know? But it takes perseverance. And I think about some of the work I've done in the past. When I was lived in Alabama for a couple of years, we were working on the Black Farmer lawsuit against USDA. And, you know, these are people that have been waiting since 1981 for some kind of reparation. And all they were getting was $50,000. I was really upset about that, but that's a whole different discussion. But this was in, you know, 1999. And they had been waiting since 1981. But it was through perseverance that we kept on going. And I think, actually, I think it's still going on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so you just have to keep pushing. And there's something that's very interesting that I must say, I think it happens every single time I've had a meeting and I've been frustrated. And the next day, somebody will call me up or see me in the grocery store and they'll just say, thank you. And, you know.
Makes it worth it.
It makes it worth it.
Yeah. Thank you. Maria Palmer?
I think we can't. I'm on town council with people that even though they may frustrate me by not wanting to act, I'm convinced that they want the best for the town, and when we talk, what their reasoning makes sense to me. So I feel like I'm in a completely different place than Greg, for example, who is working, you know, like he said, with people that know nothing about education and are making decisions based on ideology. And so I'm very thankful, actually. Even last night, even though we were, you know, in chambers until 11:30 at night, and that was our second meeting of the week, and next week we also have two meetings, and we'll hopefully get done with something, you know, vote on something. But I feel very blessed, despite all the problems challenges I see in Chapel Hill. I think that there's a difference in what we can accomplish and what we will be able to accomplish. And that's why I wanted to stress that we need to vote and remind people that today is the first day of early voting, and go out there and vote.
Well, Maria, you mentioned to Greg about education and what he has to deal with. Yeah. Let's jump on that hot potato, Greg. What's new and exciting in the world of education that keeps you going as a tomorrow's newsmaker?
Well, I think everyone is interested to see what the General Assembly will do about teacher pay this year. And unfortunately, the recommendations that have come out of a joint task force to study educator compensation have been pretty lackluster. We know there's a proposal on the table to raise the teacher pay for beginning teachers, but there seems to be no consensus in Raleigh about what to do for the rest of the teachers. And that's one of the things that seems glacial and silly and all kinds of other negative words, because if the Republican leadership of the General Assembly can't come to some consensus about how to raise the pay for teachers, I can assure them that the people of the state of North Carolina have already come to a consensus that teachers deserve a raise across the board. And so that's part of what makes it hard to sit there and watch the infighting among people who seem to be completely disconnected from those who are most impacted by the situation. And that's in education in this case, but I think it's true with other policy issues as well.
Then you have vouchers, and then you have Maria cuts Palmer. To higher education, and then you have, I don't think there's a single issue, Greg, that you're going to have to face where we're doing everything
correct.
Right.
And today's issue was, today a recommendation came from a task force to replace the Common Core standards. And the Common Core is a complicated issue, and I've written some on parts of it that I support and parts of it that I don't. But what we saw was a continuation of the pendulum swing backlash, where Republicans in the General Assembly dismissed expertise from educators and dismissed the opinions of Democrats and said, we're just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And as of July 1st, if this legislation passes, there will be no standards or curriculum for the state of North Carolina, and that seems like a horrible way to do business.
And that's the Common Core you're describing?
Correct.
They're going to throw that out?
Correct.
Well.
Well, there is some good news, though, on some of this. And I can't think of a job I'd rather have less than Greg's, actually, right now. But, you know, the legislature is continuing to get beaten in the courts. So the voucher legislation was enjoined by a court following a lawsuit. We just heard yesterday that the tenure law, the legislature's attempt to eliminate tenure, has been enjoined by a judge in Guilford County. The very restrictive sonogram, you know, anti-abortion law was struck down by a federal judge in Greensboro. The Choose Life license plates was struck down by the federal court in Richmond. So, As my friend Burton Craig, who argued the voucher case, said, the legislature doesn't have the last word on these issues. And I know that people like Greg and around his table are continuing to fight and will continue to fight, because I think there are legitimate legal and constitutional issues at stake in all of this.
So this is so Maria sad. Palmer. You're saying the good news, the bad news is we're passing terrible laws. The good news is that they're so bad they can't even go into effect.
I'll take the good news where it comes.
Thank you.
You know, I think that we really have to remind the people of North Carolina about what has made this state great. And, you know, on the days that I'm mad and angry, and today sitting in chambers was one of the worst days that I've had. I tend to think about Terry Sanford and Bill Friday. And those gentlemen came out of World War II together and started a career where they worked together for a long, long time. And they decided that they were going to fight racial segregation, and they were going to build the prosperity of this state based on having a strong public education system. And there is no reason why today's leaders shouldn't be able to come together around the same goal of building our long-term prosperity on a well-educated populace and the ability to stand up against the continued existence of institutionalized racism, other forms of inequity. So if those guys did it for a long time, and I'm just in my first couple months, I'm going to try and hang in there, too.
I don't want to leave Laura Morrison out of the conversation, because I can feel the fire in your bellies for these topics, and we're glad you're our newsmakers of tomorrow. Laura Morrison, how can the local business community help you get your job done?
So I work at the Chamber of Commerce, and something that we do for our members and generally for the entire community is try and build a sustainable community where business thrives. So something that my wonderful colleague Kristen Smith does is she does all the government relations with Orange County, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, State. And something that we tell our members and all businesses is that it's really important to make your voice heard. So it's really important to serve on advisory committees and to attend meetings and to speak up. So I think what the more of the business community could do is have those conversations with elected officials and with each other. And I think something kind of the common theme that we've all been saying but not straightforward is vulnerability, and we're all humans. So when you have conversations with people, maybe you disagree with them, but when you have that face-to-face, you realize that person's a human and has vulnerabilities and flaws and strengths. And that I learned something in a leadership class a couple weeks ago. Someone was saying, everybody's right 2% of the time. So no matter what someone is saying, look for the 2% right. So just the business community coming together, having conversations, using the chamber as a resource, and using our elected officials as a resource.
That sounds hopeful.
Well, I'm 28, so. All
right. We have about 5 minutes left. Let's go around the table, and I want to ask each of you as a newsmaker for tomorrow, let's talk about tomorrow in the broad sense. What do you see for Orange County? What was your dream? What do you visualize for Orange County in a perfect world? Can I start with you, Greg?
I think one of the issues that I really envision for Orange County is that we build a community that isn't so divided north to south. I think that part of that divide is the history of a rural-urban divide in this county, and part of it is the divide that currently exists around economic opportunity and where employment is. And I would really like to see us invest in the middle and the north of the county to try and make sure that the people live in that part of the county have the same opportunities to benefit from economic development and great lifestyle choices that people in the southern part of the county have.
Thank you, Greg. Mark Dorison.
I think I'd like to see us really reach out to and raise up the least of those in our community, so our low-wealth residents, and be able to engage them fully in the vast wealth and progress of the county, really live up to the reputation and the image we like to have of ourselves as being progressive and innovative, and actually really do something. To me, if we can't come up with some solutions, practical, implementable ones in Orange County, then I don't know where it could happen. So
thank you.
for the sake of time, take about 20 seconds. Go ahead, Maria Palmer.
Right. I think I would love to see Orange County become a leader in innovation in all the areas that Damon outlined, the environment, equity, quality of life, economy. Thank you for giving me those four, that rubric. But for us to use our imagination and with courage do what Mark said, just innovate and attack problems head on with the resources of the university, the county, and the cities.
Perfect. Thank you, Maria. How about you, Renee Price?
Well, ditto to everything everyone else has said, but also really celebrate our diversity. We have a very diverse community, and I think we need to enrich it, bring people back in, and no matter whether you're low wealth, you know, wealthy, in between, whether you have developmental disabilities or whatever, you know, whoever you are, we've got to be we have to accept each other and work together and make it a really thriving community.
Yes.
Not
yes.
just, you know, a business happening, but people connecting and thriving.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Damon Siles.
I have to give credit to my friend Seth Lajeunesse, who may also be the smartest person in Carrboro, for helping me think through a way of articulating issues in those domains, and also insisting upon us doing it in the order that I listed them in, right? Because what we were typically doing is doing it in the opposite order.
Ah.
So I hope we'll make decisions or think about how our decisions are made in that priority, that set of priorities. I also want to go on the record as saying that I think Mark Dorson's right more than 2% of the time.
Thank you, Damon. And finally, Laura Morrison.
Realistically, I hope that Orange County is a place that I can afford to stay after I get my master's. And hopefully, you know the song I'll Take You There by the Staple Sisters? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of community that I want to live in. So that's what I'm looking for.
Thank you, Laura Morrison, and thanks to all of you. You've been listening to Hour 9 of the 2014 WCHL Community Forum. My thanks to Mark Dorison, Renee Price, Greg Meyer, Laura Morrison, Damon Siles, and Maria Palmer. You can hear this and every other hour of today's forum on our website, chapelboro.com, and during rebroadcasts on WCHL in the coming weeks. Please stay tuned in our next hour titled From Raleigh to Orange, the decisions made in our capital and how they affect us here at home. This is Sharon Hill. Thanks for listening.